Sykes, too, you were describing your first operation with number 9 squadron.
Yes, number 9 naval squadron. I went up in Captain Roy Brown's flight, and we climbed at a very steep angle up to the lines, 10,000 feet and more. And then, by previous arrangement, as soon as we ran into some Archie, the shells began to burst around, another pilot led me away from the main group, and they went on their offensive patrol. And he took me round and into a steep dive to introduce me to just how much a camel could stand. Now, he went over fairly quickly down nose first. I was following him. Very soon we were going down vertically with the engine full on, the airspeed indicator around to its maximum of 180 knots, and everything making a terrible din, the wires, the wind and the struts, and we went down for thousands of feet like that in that steep dive.
Did the aircraft shake?
And oh yes, everything was shaking and howling with tremendous noise. And then I realized when he came to come out of the dive, first of all, his speed dropped slightly. That was when he throttled back the engine, and the speed dropped, and I throttled mine back, and the speed dropped a little bit. And then, just about an eighth of an inch at a time, we came out of the vertical, and at every little movement of the stick like that, you could feel the centrifugal force pushing your head down into your shoulders, and body down on the seat, and bit by bit we got it out. When the speed dropped back to about 150, then it handled quite well at that. Continued to pull it out and round it out. It just seemed to be above 150 that it had to be handled in a very sensitive way. Otherwise the canvas and the wood might have broken up.
What was the camel like in a bank, in a turn? Was that a very... You're describing the camel in a banking turn.
I found a vertical bank was a most delightful manoeuvre there. You could just move your stick an inch or two over to the side, and you could immediately turn over onto a wingtip. At the same time, you pulled the stick back at your stomach, and your nose began to whip round the horizon. At the same time, with a camel, you had to put on full left rudder because the gyroscopic force from the big Bentley engine tended to make the nose climb up into the sky on a left turn. The left rudder was needed to keep it down. If you went to the right, you again had to use full left rudder because the nose would slide down into the ground otherwise, under the effect of this gyroscopic force. I think the gyroscopic movement is at right angles to the applied force, I believe, so we'll work it out from that.
What sort of operations did you carry out with number 9 squadron?
We went on offensive patrols along the North Belgian coast, along to Ostend and round that area there, really looking out for German two-seater machines that might be carrying out observation and reporting back by wireless or reporting to the gunners, and to protect our own observation and artillery machines from attacks by German fighter scouts. But I didn't have very many of these patrols before I ran into trouble.
What happened then?
I was in the flight of 5 camels led by Roy Brown. I was the last one, and we attacked a German two-seater machine somewhere towards Ostend, and then out of the sun came down 4 Albatross fighter scouts and dived on us. Roy Brown's guns had jammed, we discovered afterwards, and he'd pulled away into climbing turns, and the flight followed him. From inexperience, and because I was the last man, I was a bit lagging behind, and before I could really join them, I got hit. The bullets had come into the cockpit and one had grazed my back, The engine stopped and petrol squirted all over my leather coat and my sheepskin boots. But immediately Roy Brown came down, and although his guns were jammed, he did a lot of stall turns and manoeuvres above the four Germans, who just left me alone. And then the sky cleared, they disappeared, they'd gone away. And I was left to do a long glide back, and more or less in peace, without anybody shooting at me. I glided back, and then after some time, took quite a long time to come down in the glide, I found that I was reaching Newport, and the canal that ran in from Newport was just in front of me, and all the flat shell-torn ground was there. I tried to put the machine down, it bounced a few times and then turned over across a shell hole. I undid my belt and dropped out in the mud and scrambled up the side of the hole. And then shells began to whistle over from the west, from the east. So I ran to the west, across the canal. There were no bridges there, so I had to swim across. And then I couldn't get out because my thigh boots were full of water and my leather coat was sodden. So I slipped out of those in the water and got up the bank all right then and ran to a trench and fell into it. I remember I was shivering. Either from cold water or fright or both, and the soldiers stripped me and wrapped me in blankets and gave me some hot tea laced with whiskey, and after that I felt very much better. And then in the evening I was at a casualty clearing station back behind the lines waiting for transport to Dunkirk to the Quaker Hospital when Roy Brown and the other three members of the flight came along in the squadron tender. They'd been searching around looking for me.
From clearing station to station,
they... Yes, they'd been going around the likely places where I would be. They found me in this casualty clearing station.
And did they take you back to the squadron, or did you go to the Quaker Hospital?
I went to the Quaker Hospital first, and got dressings, and then went back to the squadron. But things didn't seem to go very well, and I was feeling very miserable, and they finally sent me back to the hospital again. The hospital sent me over to Chatham, in England.
Who were the Quakers running? I know that the who Quakers are, but did they come from England?
They come from England, yes. They're all English Quaker girls and staff. They were manning this hospital. We had a very great admiration for them because frequently shells came over from the German long-range guns to drop in the harbour. They just cleared the hospital and just fell beyond it in the harbour. And so these girls really had a lot to put up with. They just manned the wards and took no notice of the bombardment.
And when you travelled from Dunkirk, was that on an army leave boat?
No, I came down to the harbour and got it on the duty destroyer belonging to the Dover Patrol. It was one of those four funnelled destroyers they had on that service at the time. And in the Naval Air Service, we had the privilege of travelling to and fro as passengers on the duty destroyer.
Which was a quicker and more comfortable trip.
Oh yes, it was a much nicer trip. Only on one or two occasions I went on the leave boat, but it was packed solid there. There were little paddle steamers. And the soldiers were packed on deck, and if the weather was at all bad, it was very uncomfortable and pleasant.
And to anticipate a little bit on this, when the Royal Air Force was formed, was this privilege of trapping on the destroyer stopped?
Yes, it stopped then.
Could you go by air if that was at all possible?
No, it wasn't possible to do any passenger trips by air. So the only way was to do the ferry flight, pick up one occasion SE5, another occasion the Rhone Camel, and they had to be landed at Marquise in northern France, behind Boulogne.
And you had to arrange this well in advance?
Yes, it took a few days to write to the Air Ministry, to a particular office there.
If we could revert to October 1917, when you crashed and were injured.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you became an instructor at Manston. What was happening there?
Well, Manston had a large initial training squadron there, and then across the other side of the airfield was a small unit which was known as the War Flight. And there they had pupils who'd finished their initial training and were ready to go to France. They were posted there just for a short period, and they had to have a little bit of practice on camels. Sort of
like the operational training units of the Second World War?
Yes, it was something like that in a very miniature way, because I was the only pilot there who had had experience in flying camels. And so I had to tell these young pupils all about it and how to do it. But I know I gave a good deal of thought to the matter, and I wrote it all down so that I wouldn't miss any of the little details, and I'd give them a talk on how to get into a camel, how to sit on the hump and slide down to seat and slip their toes underneath the toe straps on the rudder bar, going through all the details.
And this was, you later wrote this up and it was published in Flight.
I wrote it up for the 60th anniversary of the formation of the RAF and sent it to Flight, and they published it.
There was no dual control instruction on camels?
Not at that time. There was no dual instruction. I just had to tell them about it, and I would go up and take off and come round and do a landing, and they would have to do that.
Did you feel apprehensive when you saw some of your pupils taking off the first time after having
I don't know, I suppose I did. I suppose any instructor would be a bit worried about it. I think I was rather fortunate. They were all sufficiently advanced to be able to take over the camel and fly it. They didn't have any of the mishaps there that I'd heard about at other stations where they had a lot of mishaps on the first flight of a new pupil. And then it was very interesting work. I was flying all day long, but I wasn't demonstrating and landing camels and talking about them. I was doing taxi work down to Dover or to the Isle of Wight.
What sort of taxi and ferry work did you do from Manston?
It was used to take spare parts down to Dover, either to the naval station there, which had its own airfield on the cliffs, or to the Royal Flying Corps station, which had another airfield a bit farther along, and sometimes a naval machine would land there and be in need of a spare part for repairs. I took things like propellers tied up underneath the B2C, took them down, and to the Isle of Grain and back it was a passenger transport. Pick up some passenger, bring him back, and take him there. And then the other flights I had were test flights, testing rebuilt wrecks that had been rebuilt in the workshops at Manston. They'd usually ask me to take one out and taxi it around, and then take it off and fly it about and report on it.
Did you have to wash out any of these aircraft, or were they all very well rebuilt?
No, they weren't. As far as I can remember, there was something wrong with almost each machine. And very often I didn't find it out until I got it in the air, and it was airborne. One common fault would be the machine didn't fly level with a stick in the centre. The stick had to be well forward, perhaps, to make it fly level. It wanted to climb and the stick was back. Sometimes there were electrical faults in the leads to the ignition switches. And just details like that.
In March 1918, there were various problems on the Western Front. What effect did that then have on your time at Manston?
They combed through the war flight at Manston, and they found that I was about the only one that had the experience in flying the camels that was wanted, so I was sent off to the Western Front. Most of the others had had experience with two-seater machines and not with single-seaters.
When you left Manston and returned to the far side of the Channel, you went through the Poole squadron again at Dunkirk?
Yes, I went through the Poole there, and by that time they had the camels instead of the top of the pups and triplanes that they had on the earlier occasion. They dropped clergy camels. I think the operational squadrons have been equipped with Bentley camels by that time.
And so that by the time you actually arrived in number 3 RNAS squadron, you'd accumulated quite a number of camel flying hours.
Yes, I had.
And was it then felt that you were ready to go straight back into action again?
Oh yes, they were just waiting, I think, for a call for replacement, and it happened to come from number 3 Naval Squadron, and I was sent down.
Who was the CO then?
CO was Squadron Commander Raymond Collishaw, RNAS. And by the end of the war, he took over.